So we've been looking at Genesis chapter 6 to 9 over the last 3 weeks, and there are three key big images, big illustrations, if you like, in those chapters. Firstly, you get the flood. The flood, which reminds us of judgment. Secondly, we thought about this last week, we thought about the ark, which provides salvation. So the flood, the ark, and thirdly, the rainbow. The rainbow reminds us of God's provision, his blessing, his promises. And those blessings are ours, even while we face the messiness and difficulties of life. This is a story for us, yes, thousands of years ago, but recorded for us. We are sinners, rightly deserving God's condemnation and judgment, the flood. But God's merciful and has provided the means for our salvation. The ark illustration, the flood, the ark, they're vivid illustrations for us about our sin and the perfect salvation won for us through the Lord Jesus Christ's death on the cross. And we know, as we thought last week, that we're going to one day step out, like Noah did from the ark, onto that beautiful recreation. We're going to step out one day onto God's new creation that has been washed clean through judgment. But over the last couple of weeks, if you've been with us, we've thought about the darkness of judgment and the light of salvation. They're extremes, they're stark contrasts, dark or light, sin or salvation, on or off. But our life isn't dark or light. It's not one or the other. Our life is sort of somewhere in between. Sometimes it's a bit of a dark grey, perhaps. We face the storms of life and struggle to see the light. At other times it might be more of a light grey. And life's good and satisfying. But it's never completely perfect. The darkness is always trying to encroach. And even in the darkest moments of life, when a loved one dies, we have moments of light relief. We might remember a funny event with that person or a shared memory. After my dad died, there were lots of tears of sadness, but there were also lots of times of laughter as we remembered some of the crazy things that he got up to. Darkness and light. Also, you know, when you celebrate good things, they're never completely perfect. Sort of a silly example. A few years ago, Nikki and I went to a brilliant wedding. It was great fun, up near Oxford somewhere. It was a fantastic wedding, but on the way home, going back to London, the M40 was closed, so everybody cut down to the M4. We were stuck in a traffic jam and got home about 4 in the morning. Great wedding, terrible journey home. Silly example. Darkness and light, messiness. Think about your life. Maybe life feels quite dark at the moment. You feel overwhelmed that you're up against it. Life actually is a struggle. But the light's not completely switched off. There's still a flicker of hope and life and joy. Or maybe at the moment, actually, you'll describe your life as more at the lighter end. Life feels positive and exciting. But it's not perfect, is it? Work, presumably, is still tiring. Life isn't totally trouble-free. You know, if you had to describe yourself as somewhere on the grayscale, what shade would you describe your life, light and dark? Where would you put yourself on that scheme of things? It's not just about big things, of course. It's the normal routine of life. You know, one of your children might have had a great day at school. The other one got a detention. If you're at school, maybe you did well in a maths test, but you had an argument with your mate. You work in the health service. You're making a great difference to people's lives, but cutbacks mean you can't do quite as much as you'd like to. Light and dark, good times, hard times. Life is never just one or the other. Life is messy. We'd love it to be neat and compartmentalised, but it isn't. Life is a mixture of rain clouds and sunshine. And what do you get when you mix rain and sun? You get a rainbow. You get Genesis 9, when God talks to us about that. Genesis 9 is about the reality of our life. It records God's blessing, his provision, his covenantal promises. It's a chapter about light and life and good news. But it's not a return to the Garden of Eden. As you look through the chapter, it's a messed up world with fear and dread, with murder and drunkenness, with sin and shame, with broken relationships and death. Genesis 9 is about living in a world between the extremes of light and dark. It's a chapter about living in a broken world, but still under God's ongoing blessing. The rainbow, it is a vivid image from God to remind us of his abundant blessing. Look down there at verse 1, chapter 9, verse 1, page 10. Then God blessed Noah and his sons. So they've stepped out of the ark. Noah built the altar. They worshipped God. God made those promises. He's, verse 21 of chapter 8, we're still sinful all of the time, every inclination of our heart. But even because of that, look at verse 1. Then God blessed Noah and his sons. But what does it mean to be blessed by God? It's a Christian jargon phrase. If you've been around a church for more than a week or two, you'll have heard someone possibly say things like, well, God has blessed me, dot, dot, dot. Someone this morning, I was preaching at the Eton churches this morning, the two services this morning over there, and a lovely lady as was leaving said, have a blessed week. God bless you this week. It's a lovely thing to say. Now, normally when people use that phrase, God has blessed me, dot, 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 it's usually used in relation to success or health or family or wealth or a job. It's a Christianized way of saying, I've got good things. Now, of course, if you have good things, it's right to give thanks to God for them, don't you? You know, that's right and proper. Everything we get from is from God anyway. But that's not what the Bible means by saying you're being blessed by God. God's blessing, it's about relationship. It's about identity. It's about belonging in God's family and living in his land. It's why someone who has materially nothing can talk about being blessed by God. It's not about what we have. It's about who we are. God's blessing is shown through being in his family, as Noah is here. It's having God as our father, is the language we use. Knowing that whatever we face in this life, whether light or dark, whether in the storms or in the sun, we're blessed by God, and we can't lose that. Oh no, you never let go. Whatever you're facing in life, good or bad, as you go through the ongoing, usual churn of life, remember, if you're a Christian, you are blessed by God. Don't lose sight of that. Don't let go of that. God doesn't promise that he'll sort the struggles that you're facing in this life out. He doesn't promise that. He might do, but he doesn't promise that he will. Whether he provides materially, whether he heals you or your loved ones, whether your life is darker than light, whatever you face, you are blessed by God. Someone, Nikki told me this yesterday, said to Nikki recently how liberating it was for them not focusing their prayers on changing their circumstances. This particular individual, their life had a number of challenges within it. Some real struggles that you think, crumbs, that must be really difficult to deal with. And they really are difficult challenges and struggles in life. And they spent most of the time praying that God would change their circumstances. But then a while back, they changed their prayers. So instead of praying that God would change what's going on, they prayed that God would help them to cope with them, the challenges that they were facing. This person said that was liberating. It enabled them to focus on God and knowing they were blessed by him, even in the dark times. Yes, of course, they still prayed that God would alleviate and change their circumstances, because God tells us to pray about all things. But that wasn't their primary focus. That was secondary prayers. The first prayer was, God, help me to cope. Help me to still trust you. Help me to keep going in my faith. Help me to know that I am blessed by you. And if it is your will, change dot, dot, dot. Liberating to deal with challenge. Now, of course, that's not to belittle or diminish whatever struggles and challenges you face. They are struggles and challenges, day by day, week by week. But in those challenges and struggles, God is with you. You are His. You are blessed by God. Look again at verse 1, and then see how God reveals His blessing. He gives detail then of what that means. Then God blessed Noah and his son, saying to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth." Did you spot, by the way, verse 7 is almost an identical repetition of verse 1. The point is that between those verses, you've got verse 1 and verse 7. The point is that God shows His blessing by calling us to be fruitful and enjoy the gift of His creation as we rule it under His authority. It's an expression of God's blessing about being in His world with Him in charge of us as we enjoy what He's given us. You may have spotted it's the same instruction that God gave Adam and Eve back in Genesis 1 for those that were here back in September. But as this is no return to Eden. It's not sin and pain-free like it was in Genesis 1. That's clear when you look on from verse 20 and the problems at the end of the chapter. But we are supposed to see this as a restart, a new beginning. Deliberately, the language of Genesis 1 is repeated in verses 1 to 3. We're told to be fruitful, to fill the earth. The earth is a gift from God for us to use. God establishes humanity to rule the earth under His direction. And more than that, look at verse 3. God gives us the plants and the animals to eat. It's abundant provision from a gracious God. Now, we know, Extinction Rebellion time, we know that we've not managed God's abundant creation properly. We've wasted resources, we've been selfish. In many ways, we've made a bit of a pig's ear of God's glorious world, whatever you think about Extinction Rebellion. Clearly, we've not managed what God's given us for the sake of the whole of humanity. But God still provides for us. So it's right we give thanks to God for the good gifts He's given us, the way that He's blessed us in those ways. The key point of verses 1 to 7 is about our immense value to God. How much He values each and every one of us. Whoever you are, whatever you're facing in life, however good or bad it is at the moment, look at verse 6. Whoever sheds human blood, by humans shall their blood be shed. For in the image of God has God made mankind. Now I know the implications of this verse is that murder will happen. That's why God gives that instruction about how to deal with it. So we know that the problems you got from Genesis 4 onwards, when Cain and Abel, the murder, the first murder, that's going to carry on. We're still going to have death and violence and murder. So that's an implication of that. It's also the beginning of an argument in favour of capital punishment. The Bible has a lot to say on those kind of topics, and we can debate that afterwards if you'd like. But for now, park those thoughts about murder and capital punishment. And try and think about what that verse says about your value. How much you're worth. Again, if you were here in September, it makes us think of Genesis 1. We're made in the image of God. Each person who has ever lived, from every tribe, tongue and nation, is made in the image of God. That means each person has immense value and dignity. It actually means that an attack on a human is an attack on God. We have that high value. We're damaging someone that God has made in His image. Now, there's a lot to say about sanctity of life and capital punishment and just war for those training to be soldiers and that sort of stuff. But at the base level here, each and every one of us, each and every person anywhere, has immense value and dignity. And we know that being made in the image of God isn't about physical looks. He doesn't look like this. God is spirit, so He has no body. It's not a physical thing. It's being made in the image of God is, it's linked to the language of blessing. It's to be in a relationship with God. It's to be made in the character of God, to love, to have friendships, to communicate, to relate to each other. Many of us feel that we don't have much to offer. Often some of us feel worthless. We look around others and think, oh, they've got so much to offer, they're so gifted, they've done so well. They've got this, that, and the other. I can't do much. They can do it better than me. Have you ever kind of used that narrative, that conversation going on in your head? They're better parents than me. They're a better wife than me. They're a better husband than me. They're doing it better than me. Have you ever had those kind of conversations and you're putting yourself down? Remind yourself who made you. God made you in his image. Almighty, awesome, majestic, all-powerful, all-loving, creator God made you in his image. This morning on Twitter, I thought this was brilliant and beautiful this morning on Twitter. I've no idea who it is because I don't follow him, but someone else I did, but I've retweeted it. Dear Christian, there is no shame in being ordinary. Who you are is enough. Your worth is limitless to God, with or without accomplishments. In the darkness of life, in the lightness of life, wherever your life is, you are made in God's image. You have value. You have dignity. Remember that. The reality of life is that we've been blessed by God. We're made in his image to rule his amazing world and to benefit from his abundant provision. And the reality of life for us in his family is to live under God's promises. Live under God's promises. Look at verses 8 to 17. I don't know whether you spotted this when Rob read it, but it's verses 8 to 17 are actually incredibly repetitive. It sounds, hang on, is he reading the same verse again? No, it's very repetitive. The word covenant is used 8 times in those verses. A covenant is a promise, a contract. It's sometimes covenants are a two-way thing, a two-way promise. It's like, if you do this, I'll do this for you, like a two-way contract. But this promise in Genesis 9 is one way. It's unconditional. It's from God and saying, this is what will happen always, forever, for everyone, regardless of what you do. It's an unconditional promise from God. It's for Noah and all his descendants. That includes you and me then. It's a promise to all mankind, look down there, and all living creatures, that God won't destroy the world via a flood again. That cataclysmic flood that we read about in chapters 6 and 7. Even though the state of our hearts is the same as it was for those guys before the flood. 8:21 tells us, even though every inclination of our heart is sinful all of the time, even though there'll be violence, even though we'll waste God's abundant provision of the earth like they did before the flood, despite all that, God won't judge the earth via a cataclysmic flood again. Verse 9, let me read from there. I now establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you and with every living creature that was with you, the birds, the livestock and all the wild animals, all those that came out of the ark with you, every living creature on earth. I establish my covenant with you. Never again will all life be destroyed by the waters of a flood. Never again will there be a flood to destroy the earth. This is an everlasting covenant for Noah and all generations to follow. Mark Twain, the guy who wrote Huckleberry Finn, Tom Sawyer kind of stuff, he was leaving church one Sunday during a great storm that was happening as they were leaving church. And his friend said, "Oh, do you think it will ever stop?" And he said, "Well, it always has before. The last 3 weeks we've had loads of rain," ironically while we've been thinking about Noah and the flood on Sundays. Last weekend in Japan, that was their massive typhoon that happened. But after the storm, we know the sun will come out. God is keeping his promise. Never again will I destroy the earth by a flood. And that is a metaphor for us. We're told in the New Testament that this is a metaphor for us. But when we face the storms of life, yes, they're serious, damaging, painful and destructive. We saw the damage last week in Japan of that storm. But in our life, the storms that we face are hard. But we know they'll end. Often we'll find rest and comfort in this life. Some here in our church family have had cancer. As brutal and hard as they went through it, but the storm passed. And they're wonderfully clear. Many of us have lost loved ones over the years. The pain is severe, it's brutal. But it changes over time. Still hurts, but it's different. Some of us are struggling with our children for a whole variety of reasons. But often it really is just a phase they're going through. After the storm, the sun comes out. Others here feel that life hasn't turned out as they'd hoped. Our work isn't satisfying, our relationships don't fulfill us. But the storms will pass. It may pass in this life, but ultimately nothing in this life will fully satisfy and fulfill us. You may be ill and not be healed in this life. Your prayer about a more fulfilling job may not be answered with a yes. God may say no to your requests. But God's promise, God's covenant is everlasting. This world will not be destroyed by flood. God promises that it will be transformed when the new heavens will descend on the transformed earth and we'll live in God's rest forever. Then we'll truly, perfectly, completely be blessed by God. The storms will be done away with forever and we will truly be living in the light of Jesus. Look at Revelation to see how glorious it is. For those of us who actually life is going well, sometimes it feels harder to call out on God at those times. But you need to remember God's promises. However well you think this life may be going, the one to come is vastly superior. This life is not all it is, and that's a good thing. And for those who are struggling, remember the promises of God. Remember that between the storm and the sun, you find a rainbow. Look at verse 13. God speaking, I have set my rainbow in the clouds, and it will be the sign of the covenant between me and the earth. Now, it's not that God needed reminding of his promises. God's always faithful. He always knows what he said. It's symbolic of his promises. And it's also not that he just created rainbows at that point that existed before then. I don't think Noah went, ooh, colourful in the sky. They'd been there before. It's God imprinted his meaning onto it. He said, that's symbol, that's to remind you about my promises. And rainbows are beautiful to look at. When I see one, I actually feel compelled to keep looking at them because you don't want them. You know they'll disappear shortly, so you want to keep looking at them. I've seen double rainbows, although I don't think I've... You can't really see it, actually. That photo is absolutely stunning. It's not mine. I nicked it off the internet. I don't think I've ever seen one quite as perfect and beautiful as that. Google rainbows on the internet when you go home. Rainbows are beautiful and stunning. And whenever I see one, I remember God's promise. It's a promise of protection. It's a promise about God's blessing. It's a promise of belonging to God. And it's a sign of God's everlasting promise, even in the face of mankind's old, old problem of sin and death. The flood didn't get rid of the problems that caused by Adam and Eve's sin in the garden and death that came through Cain and Lamech and all these guys. They're still there. We still experience them. We live in a mixed up world. The reality of life is one of light and dark. But even in the face of our sin, God's promises hold. Even though Noah and his sons messed up, look at verse 21, just very briefly, the last end of the chapter, verse 21. Noah got drunk. Verse 22, Ham disgraced his father by shaming him and laughing about him to his brothers. Even though, verse 25, there is curse and broken relationship. Even though death still reigns, verse 29. Noah lived a total of 950 years and then he died. We're back in Genesis 5 for those who were there. Do you remember that genealogy? All interspersed with, and then he died, and then he died, and then he died, and then he died, and then he died. That's still happening after the flood. Even in the face of all of that, the rainbow reminds us God will always fulfill his promises. Whatever you face in life, Maybe you're struggling at the moment to keep going as a Christian. You know, your faith doesn't seem to help. Indeed, it often feels to make life harder. Why should I keep going trusting you? What help does my faith bring me? God, if you were God, it wouldn't be like this. If you ever feel like that, remember the rainbow. Remember God's sign that points us to his promise to preserve us and sustain us. The rainbow is a physical reminder that lifts us from our feelings and our emotions. It points us to God and his blessing. If we feel that Christianity isn't working for us, we can look at the rainbow and be reminded of the truth of God's promises. Genesis chapter 6 to 9, they've got three key images to help us in the mixed up reality of our life. Firstly, the flood. God sent that cataclysmic flood as a judgment on the wickedness of mankind. It's a warning to us not to ignore the consequences of our sin. They're serious. The flood. But secondly, the ark. God provides the means for salvation from our deserved judgment. The means for salvation through faith. Those who walk by faith in his Son, the Lord Jesus Christ. The dark and the light. But finally, the third image, the mixture of the two, the rainbow. Whatever we face, maybe life isn't going well, it feels more like a storm at the moment. Or maybe it's going really well, and life is, wow, it's brilliant. But all, for most of us, is probably somewhere in between those two extremes. Whoever we are, wherever we are, remember the rainbow. Remember God's promises. God blesses you. God's made you in his image. God's made a covenant with you. And God has done everything to bring you into his eternal rest. The storms will pass. The sun will come out. The reality of the Christian life is to live under God's ongoing blessing, even in the face of our old problem of sin and death.